This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the June 15th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. This is a forum that is intended to help our listeners to gain knowledge, exchange ideas, become current on relevant investment news, and to teach. Now, you can reach us 4 to 5 Pacific Time, where we're live Monday through Friday, or you can call our 24-hour listener line anytime you want, ask any question you want, as long as it's financial. So just leave your question or comment, and we'll get it on the next Invest Talk. Today, we're going to talk with some about a question of diversification. I've talked about this many times. Of course, we promote it as a principal means of mitigating risk. And we've talked about the different kinds of risks there are when you invest. And one of them is a lack of diversification, you know, that risk to your portfolio. But there's also evidence that risk can be reduced only to a certain extent. You can be over-diversified too. I used to call it diversified, making it worse, not better. So, of course, we all know one of the things you can use, you know, one of the investments you can use is mutual funds to diversify, or ETFs. But how many is too many? We're going to talk about that during this hour. You may have questions about international investing. Well, that's part of the diversification conversation we're going to have. So I welcome your call about any money topic. And we're going to get to the phones in just a minute. We talk a great deal about investing in companies, but what about investing in natural resources? Natural resources investing has been touted as a great investment for those who want to protect against inflation. And it helps greatly on your diversification ideas. Now, natural resources include oil and gas. Everybody's familiar with them. Precious metals, minerals, other kinds of metals. And although natural resources may act as a store of value, there are other reasons why these securities could rise significantly in the future. They are very cyclical. I want to warn you about that. You know, natural resources are very cyclical. That meaning that the economic cycle really controls prices and the stock prices and the prices of the resource itself. Now, we also know that countries like India and China are having huge demands on natural resources because they're upgrading their infrastructures, they're building, and we know China has overbuilt, but India hasn't. And this does, you know, this overbuilding and underbuilding and political spending and not spending on infrastructure, all this, here, even here in the United States, drives a natural resource cycle. And it's difficult to know what part you're in that natural resource cycle. But the overall general consensus is demand for natural resources is going to go up over the next 10, 15, 20 years. Now, is there enough supply? And see, now you get into the economics of supply and demand. And you get that they oversupply and undersupply and oversupply and undersupply. Natural resources are a very good thing to invest in to achieve some diversification in your portfolio. And if you think inflation's coming, it's a very good place to be for inflation, investing in natural resources. So there are options. There's ways to invest in it. A lot better ways now than there were 10, 20, 30 years ago. When I was first getting into it, you could not invest in natural resources. You could buy oil companies, and that was about it. Today, you can invest almost in anything using those ETFs. Now, what should you do? What do you want to talk about? How do you reduce and mitigate risk? What should you be doing now as you see what the market's been its activities recently? Should you be worried about it? Do you have any questions? Let's talk about it. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time. And let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Justin and Steve, this is Pete from Minnesota. Hey, I've heard you guys talking about a downturn that you think is coming in the market. Can you just tell me, what do you think will happen to bonds in that situation, just in the short term? I understand that interest rates are going up in the long term, but what do you think will happen to bonds if there's a fairly big downturn in the market? Thanks.
It's been predictable over the decades now that when people leave stocks, they go into bonds, and when they leave bonds, they go into stocks. So if the people start selling and worried about stocks, and that's evidenced by the stock market falling, usually that benefits bonds. So if we had a pretty decent correction, I would suspect bond values would go up, despite the Federal Reserve probably going to raise rates. So don't fear bonds in a stock market crash. They're usually moving opposite direction. Now, the reason why I'm saying usually and in history, because we are in very unusual historic times now with interest rates so very low. So it's put a lot of those previous historical relationships under strain. Because it used to be you left stocks, you went into bonds. You moved out of bonds, you moved into stocks. So the prices would fluctuate that way. But it's not so clear cut these days. It doesn't necessarily do it. But I would suggest that if the stock market had a big correction in the next few months, that you would see the bond market do pretty good over that same period of time. Okay? Long term, I'm not a big bond person. I'm not a big believer in bonds. Yes, they're good for diversification. Yes, they're good for hedging against the market fluctuating. Yes, they're good for producing some income. So there's a place for it. It's not my favorite investment bonds. Mutual funds. How many is too many in a portfolio? That's one of our talking points today. I also want to talk about what is the smart money doing? Are they buying and selling? And are they buying and selling big tech? Because we've seen the movements, the volatility here. So what should you be doing? What are they doing and what you should be doing? Medical marijuana, I get a lot of calls about medical marijuana. And I keep saying, it's against the law. And people say, not in the state of California, not in the state of Nevada, not in the very state. It's still against the law because there's federal law that is, well, I want to talk about that. There might be some changes coming down the road. Well, may or may not. So we want to maybe discuss that a little bit. And do you think the online service of Costco or Amazon is cheaper? Which one? There was a study done. And which one is cheaper and how much? Very interesting. I thought it was very interesting. I would have never guessed it. But it's fascinating. And those are the things I'm going to talk about today. But, of course, always you are first. So whatever financial stuff you want to discuss, we're going to discuss. The market was down today, Dow down 15. Now, that's not bad. It was down much bigger than that during the day. But the NASDAQ was down 30. And that's a pretty good move for the NASDAQ on the downside. And the S&P down 5. So the market overall was down. So there's no question about that. Well, the question is why is the NASDAQ looking so, looking much weaker than the rest of the market, really? Why that? Interesting stuff. I think. Of course, my interest has peaked pretty easily compared to other people. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Words to live by. There's no such thing as a sure thing. I want an example. Some said oil prices at $100 a barrel are here to stay for the long haul. Do you remember that? All over the news, financial news media. Totally untrue. Remember it was going to go to $200 a barrel? Nope. That was conventional wisdom back then. What's unconventional wisdom? Often is better. Unconventional wisdom. Don't listen to the experts. 888-99-CHART is how you get through to me right now.
Hi, this is Ethan from Michigan. Hope all is well. I'm calling today to get your opinion on a short-term, six-month trade I've been considering. And this is to buy a put on our favorite stock, Tesla. Disregarding Tesla's cash burn, debt, and valuation, it seems that one of the main drivers of this story stock's recent increase is due to the anticipation for a very successful launch of the Model 3. My expectation currently is that the launch will not go super smooth, and it'll be a slower than expected launch. And consequently, there will also be some large amount of quality issues. I think that this could lead to a downward spiral of the stock price. I would appreciate if you can suggest a reasonable strike price or strike price range for this put. And also, it would be nice if you can provide some counterpoints or counter situations to mine that might, you know, maybe poke holes in my story and give me a more well-rounded view. Thanks a lot for your time. Take care. Bye.
Tesla, TSLA, it has been moving up and up and up. And as we all know, who they are, the electric manufactured cars. And they're in support of his argument. What he is arguing, everybody, is putting the stock to somebody at a certain price. So you own it, but if it goes down a certain amount, you get to put it to somebody. You can do that. You can buy naked puts as well, not own it, do it that way. He might be doing that too. So I don't know. But he wants to put it to somebody, meaning he thinks it's going to go down. He wants to put it to them at maybe $360 a share, and right now it's $376, because he thinks it might go below that to maybe $350, $320. See, then he makes the difference, and he pays very little for the put. Okay, so he can make a very good return if that happens. If it goes the opposite direction, you lose the premium that you paid for the put option. It's an option that we're talking about, put option. Now, I'm not going to get into that because I think they're a little too complicated for everybody. But we have sold, on one of our stock manager accounts, we have sold Tesla short, meaning we think it's going to go down too. And one of the reasons is because we agree with what he just said about, we think the launch of their Tesla 3, is it? It's going to be full of problems, just like their SUV launch was full of problems and delayed over a year. Do you remember that? Now, the arguments that I can, contrarian to your point of view, in other words, I think Tesla is still going to go up, is because it's still selling a lot of cars now without the launch of the 3. It's selling a lot of cars. It's a very high demand, very high sales growth. Last quarter, 135% sales growth last quarter. 88% the quarter before that, 145% the quarter before that. So it's still very high sales growth, and here you are betting against that growth of sales. Now, you could come back and say that, yeah, but they're not making any money. And yeah, they're not going to make money. They didn't make money last year, the year before. They're not going to make money this year. They're not going to make money next year. But they're growing their sales. Management owns 23%, so they're pretty optimistic this going up. A lot of insiders own the company because they think it's going up further, right? So you're betting against a stock that has been just a screamer for some time, and you're betting against the upward trend that it's in right now. Strike price. If you get three, it depends on what the premium is. You can put the strike price. I wouldn't mind doing it at 360. I think it's going below that. It's at 375 right now. But, it depends on the premium. How much money do you have to, it depends. I'm not a big options trader. It's not my area of expertise. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. It's not just about the individual stocks and bonds you own. It's the mix that you have. So let's hear about your portfolio. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. Okay, how many mutual funds are too many? Okay, you can get away with one. You can also get away with 10, 12. It depends on you, depends on what part of the market you're going to be in. It's hard to say this is the right amount. What is the right amount is how, number one, I have to ask questions of you as an investor. How aggressive do you want to be? Okay, do you want to be very aggressive? Then you can have fewer focused funds that are in the market and in emerging markets and international markets, and you could have fewer funds. If you want to be more diversified as to asset classes, you'd have more funds. Bond funds, we were just talking about natural resource fund, You know, and you can also just buy one if you want to be in the market, to stay in the market, and buy an S&P 500 fund or a Russell 2000 fund for small caps, a Russell 3000 for broader market, or an all market index fund. There's you can just buy one if you want to be in the market for many, many, many years. You can buy one. So it's difficult to answer that question without knowing you, the individual, and what you want. When you buy funds, some of the things you want to look at, if you're buying non-index funds, then you have to do a little research. You got to do a little work. You got to figure out what's the best managers, what are the costs, what are the costs of the funds, what are their top holdings, and make sure when you buy a second fund, there's not a lot of overlap. In other words, the same holdings as two separate funds. Why would you do that? If you have two funds to choose from and they're almost exactly the same, just go with the cheaper expense ratio fund, the cheaper fund. Funds charge on average 1%-ish. If they're foreign, maybe 1.5. I've seen them as high as 2.5. And I see them very low. Vanguard has very low funds, you know, 0.11, 0.17, 0.2% per year. Very low funds, especially the index funds. So it's all over the board how much you're going to pay. Do not buy loaded funds. If you don't know what a loaded fund is, make sure you learn the term loaded fund. At A shares, B shares, C shares, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you do not know enough to invest your own money. Learn what those are. Go to investopedia.com, ask them. They have a really good website for learning the terminology in my business. Okay? 888-99-CHARTER is our number. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. As I said, 888-99-CHART is the anytime phone number.
Good morning, Steve and Justin. This is Sean again from New York. I love your show. I was listening to one of your previous podcasts. Steve was explaining the aftermarket trading and that market doesn't really close at 4 o'clock at Eastern Standard Time. And some people can still keep trading. But how come individual investors cannot trade after that time? Or at least I don't know how to do it. So basically, what does closing time refer to if people can still trade after market closing? And if there's any way for individual investors to continue trading after 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
I will say there's no simple way for your individual investor, because it's the big investors with large blocks of shares that are changing hands with other big investors that usually happens after hours. And you got to remember that many stocks, if they're foreign, trade on their own exchange overseas somewhere, and they might be listed on our market and be listed on another market that's open. So it's hard for you and me. Yeah, I tell people, why are you sweating it? You don't need to sweat it. It's not going to help you much. You in the Ukraine, I can see it being a problem because our markets are, you know, might be open while you're asleep. Yeah, that could be a problem. But you really can't participate in aftermarket trading when you're just a small guy, individual people. You really can't. So I wouldn't worry about it. You don't need to worry about that. Okay, good question though. According accounting and legal fees, bank charges, sales and marketing costs, travel expenses. The formula for operating costs can be expressed this way. So these are what we're going. This is a term you should know, everybody. This is what is that when you're talking about accounting, legal fees, bank charges. When you're talking about a company, sales, marketing costs, travel expenses. So what is that? Well, that's your operating cost. The cost to operate your business, accounting, legal fees, bank charges, sales and marketing costs, travel expense, operating costs to run your business. How much does that cost? Operating costs are expenses associated with maintenance and administration of business on a day-to-day basis. Operating costs. What is the definition? Operating costs, cost of goods sold plus operating expenses. Now, if you want to see more in-depth definition examples, just go to our friends at investopedia.com. They're very good, as I told you. Be sure to sign up for our Invest Talk Insiders program. Insiders can access chart lessons, recorded webinars, or special watch lists. It's free. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com. You have our number right there. 888-99-CHART is the way to reach me. You can do it right now.
Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and the process of investing. It's more than just picking stocks. Investing begins with savings, of course. And along the way, there are issues about taxes, there's estate planning, and on and on. KPP Financial clients have a ready resource of information about any and all of these personal financial matters. All they need to do is ask. Managing money gets more complex every day, and there are more options than the average person can possibly comprehend. And when we're confronted with too many choices, research shows that people put off a decision. And most times, that's not productive. So if you'd like to know about KPP Financial's investment programs, just check them out on investtalk.com. They're designed to suit any and all of life's situations. KPP Financial, serving the average investor, helping them find solutions for more than 20 years. Now let's get back to the podcast. And now let's continue with Invest Talk for this Thursday, June 15th. Financial advisor Steve Peasley welcomes your call right now on any money topic on your mind. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
This is Lauren from Delaware. I have a question regarding NXP Semiconductors, ticker symbol NXPI. It looks like an interesting stock. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. Thank you.
NXPI. Okay, that's NXP Semiconductors. It is out of the Netherlands, a Netherlands-based provider of mixed-signal analog power management, RF, digital processing semiconductor. Makes chips. It's made money. It's grown its earnings quite consistently. It had a little dip in 2016 from 560 the year before per share, making 560 per share, down to 431 in 2016. Then back up this year to 634, next year to 721. So I don't know if you noticed, but as people call and ask about stocks, you've noticed that their earnings prospects looking forward is bigger. Now, those are estimates. They're not facts. They're estimates. And I'll tell you this, estimates are always wrong. But I can tell you generally they've been higher, and they will generally be higher because of that. This just won't be the numbers they tell us. So is this stock overpriced? Well, if it makes $7.21 next year, it's a $109 stock, so that's right around 15 PE, and its range is 9 to 26, so it's right about in the middle. So I would say that it's fairly valued. What I don't like is the most recent quarter sales fell by 1%. Before that, sales were growing 50% for the four quarters before that. That I don't like. Why did the sales fall by 1%? And is that, what was a reason for that? And before I would buy this stock, I'd find that out. But I would not buy here. It's too expensive. It's fairly priced. It's not overly priced. It's not underpriced. But it's fairly expensive. Based on its sales growth, it's going to fall. It has fallen this most recent quarter. That worries me a bit. And the stock is real close to its 52-week high. So it's already made its run. It ran up from $96, $97 to $109, $110, and it's at $109 even today. So it's been going sideways after popping up, it's been going sideways for almost all whole month of June so far. I would not buy it. Too expensive at this place, at this time. We're moving into the part of the year that usually is weaker for the market. It's just not a great time to buy it and not a great price to buy it at. Maybe if it went down, 10%, had a 10% pullback, I might feel better about it. But NXPI, everybody, NXPI. I. Del, what are the smart money? What is the smart, quote-unquote, smart money doing? And these are, you know, we're talking about hedge fund managers and, you know, the best mutual fund managers. What are they doing? What are they buying, selling? And be a little bit more specific. What are they doing about big tech? Are they buyers or sellers? And it's been very, very clear that they are sellers. Now, it's interesting. Someone else is buying. Someone's buying because it's just, it hasn't collapsed or anything yet. But if you look at Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, the smart money is slightly negative. Their outlook on every one of those is slightly negative. Their general outlook on those top tech stocks, these are the big names, right, is negative. Slightly, not dramatically. Who's positive? The small investor is extremely positive, or what they called it, very positive. In other words, these are the momentum buyers. They're very positive, or at least positive, on all these stocks. Smart money is slightly negative. So obviously, there's always a seller and there's always a buyer. Okay, who's the buyer? Who's the seller? Now, smart money guys, you can say it, they're experts and they're always wrong. But generally speaking, as a group, and you're looking at this kind of statistics, they're more right than they are wrong. So they are slightly negative on these big tech names. And so they're cutting back their exposure. And the momentum buyers are buying that exposure. Something to watch, something to be careful of. You know, I try not to be too negative. I try not to be too positive because I don't want to influence people what they should do. I can only tell you facts. For instance, the fact is that the market's probably overvalued. And depending on how you look at it, it could be extremely overvalued or just slightly overvalued. And it'd be hard to find anything that would show you that it's undervalued. It's hard. You can't find statistics that will tell you that. It's very difficult. I'm sure I'll find somebody. But you know, something that somebody will point to. Well, what about this stat? But most of the stats are indicating that the market's overvalued. It can stay overvalued for years, people. Don't think just because it is overvalued, therefore I got to get out. No, that's not so. That is not so. So don't just jump out. It's not a smart thing to do. Okay, here's a KPP investment program that may suit you. We have what's called Active 401k. I'm pretty excited about it. It's called Active 401k. It's a new system that can help you meet a serious challenge that you are facing, and that is, what do you do with your 401k? What are you supposed to buy and sell? Should I sell this, buy that? And it, within the limits of your choices, this Active 401k will give you an allocation based on your personal risk tolerance, because they'll be asking questions. The system asks questions. Well, you know, how much risk you want to take, how much you don't want to take. And then it looks at the choices in your 401k and tries to give you the optimum portfolio mix to meet your... And, of course, I know people have trouble knowing what to buy, what to sell. And then every quarter, it updates. It gives you an updated allocation. So if things change, they'll change with it. If let's say your mutual 401k options grow, or let's say you're getting to a point where you want to be less risky and you want to change your risk profile, you can do that too. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com, click on the investments tab, and look for Active 401k. Okay, let's go to Raul in Sunnyvale. How you doing, Raul?
Hi, good evening, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Steve, I had a question regarding IBM. On technical basis, it has a couple of gaps to fill on the upside.
Yes.
But I do notice that it is actually in a squeeze or in R7 for the last few days, and the Bollinger Bands are moving up. I wanted to know your opinion about that and if you have any ideas or any take on that.
Well, just for everybody else, Bollinger Bands are a technical study. And they're a band that travels along the price of the stock. And the theory is if it's near the top of the band, it probably will roll back down the price to the lower part of the band. And it fluctuates in the band. Okay, so I haven't got him up yet, but he said that it's near the top. Is that what you said, Raul, is near the top of the band?
Yeah, so basically the kettle channels are inside the Bollinger Bands, and okay. It's kind of moving up. So basically it's forming a squeeze, and it has a couple of gaps to fill up on the upside.
The gap's up to about $168. It's at $154. There's a gap between here and about $157 or so. And then the other one starts at $160, $175 to $167. Those are gaps where the stock gapped down. One day it was this price. It opened up next day below it a certain amount. That's a gap down. And the stock prices tend to fill gaps, meaning that they tend to go up or down to fill the blank spot on the left side of the chart. So Raul's thinking that, I'm assuming, Raul, don't let me put words in your mouth, but Raul's thinking that the stock is probably going to go up and fill the gap. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And so it does look like it has formed a bottom, and it's been slowly moving up off that bottom. So that's a good sign. I think you've got a really good chance of filling the near-term gap and a pretty good chance by the next few months filling the long-term gap. And the only thing that would be fighting you for IBM would be the market itself turning down. That's the only thing that you'll be bucking. But IBM is fairly inexpensive. It's going to make $13.92 next year. It's $154 stock. So you're looking at, you know, a fairly, you know, not an expensive stock because sales are still falling. And, you know, people are a little concerned that IBM is falling behind the eight ball and not staying up on their, with the technology changes going on. And IBM has gone through this cycle numerous times over the years. And they always seem to come out. You know, they always seem to, you know, catch up with whatever. You know, and right now they're IT consultant service. They used to be big iron selling big computers. Now they still do, but that's not their main business anymore. It's consulting. Now it's got to be the cloud computing. They got to move that in that direction. They're trying to do that. So yeah, I think you have a good shot at filling these gaps, Raul. I do.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 888-99-CHART. Now it's all technical analysis we were doing mostly there, everybody. Technical analysis. Technical analysis is nothing more than looking at a chart, looking at all the various studies. There's dozens upon dozens of studies you can apply to the chart. And all those studies are there. All they're doing is looking at the volume, the price movement, and putting different, we call them studies, on top of them. Moving averages, Bollinger Bands, pivot points, oscillators, you name it, we put it on there to see if we can figure out the future. And that's pretty impossible, just so you know. Very, very difficult. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. You know, we get a lot of calls and they get a lot of excitement about medical marijuana because states have been improving it and allowing it to be sold. But I've been pretty much pounding the desk saying, okay, that's wonderful, but I would not invest in it because it's against federal law. There's federal laws pertaining to drugs. And the sheriff, the U.S. Marshals could come in and shut these places down in a heartbeat. Here's the pros and cons because there's some changes going on. Jeff Sessions, Attorney General of the United States, in May asked Congress to allow Justice Department to prosecute businesses and individuals in states where medical marijuana laws are in place to allow it to be sold. So in May, now remember we're June now, he asked Congress to allow Justice Department to go after those people. Today, Congress introduced a bill that could end federal prohibition of medical marijuana. So what's it to be? This is what it is. It's still against the law, everybody, against the federal government's law. They can do whatever they want. They can shut them down. If the law passes federal law to allow medical marijuana, the stocks will take off. The stocks will take off, and the big boys will get into that business. Who's big boy? Philip Morris, R.J. Reynolds. Big Tobacco, that's who I see coming in. and doing a lot of this, because it's growing marijuana plants. They're experts at tobacco farming, you know, and figuring out doing deals with farmers. They'll just repackage this, and I can see them getting into it. They might set up separate divisions, but the little small marijuana mom-and-pop places are going to be swamped with competition. And there's going to be mostly losers, but there'll be a few winners. There'll be winners, too. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
I have two questions, non-stock questions for you. The first, real quickly, would be on a recommended reading, either a daily or weekly. Is there a newspaper or is there a magazine that you recommend? I'm new to this game. I'm more for learning purposes. The second question is more of a general market question. I'm sure that you guys have been through some downturns before. Are we in a different marketplace, though, globally? There's more millionaires today than there have ever been. There's more globally people investing. Do you see this as a, you know, maybe you can comment a little bit on if this is a different panic downturn, or is everything just cyclical and this just happened?
Answer the first question, it's cyclical. Nothing's different than past times as far as prices, market prices. Always, there's always something to cause it to fall and always something to cause it to grow. And the only different parts we have now is the Federal Reserve has been so accommodating for so long. And that probably kept us out of a deep depression, probably. And the whole world did that, by the way, all central bankers. Or there's the other side of the argument, they were part of the problem with that extra low interest rate. But cyclically, nothing is new. Nothing is new. I refer back to the dot-com era where everybody thought that there's a new paradigm change and new way to do business. And guess what? Nope, you still need to make money. Still need to make profits. There's been an argument that the P.E. ratio in the last 17, 18 years is higher than the P.E. ratio beforehand. And that is true on average for the market. But there's going to be reversion to the mean. There's nothing new about any of this. Reading. I like to read online. I read a lot of MarketWatch.com, Yahoo Finance, MSS Money. I like to read every morning. I read the Wall Street Journal and Financial Times. I'm a reader, so I read a lot. I love the Economist magazine. I read that, but you know, I don't think you can read as much as I read because you don't have the time. I do. You listen to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. So, there was a study done. Prices from Costco, online prices at Costco and online prices at Amazon. Who do you think came out cheaper, and how much? Would you guess Costco or Amazon? Well, it was Costco. Okay, not only was it Costco online services, not their store, by the way, this is their Costco online prices, online, were 17% below Amazon. 17%! The national brands, you know, the brands of stuff you recognize, like Nestle's and the names, they're 19% lower. And the Kirkland brand, which is Costco's brand, was 16% less than Amazon. Now, what does this mean? This means that Costco's got a great opportunity to compete with Amazon and take away market share. This is what happens when you're always the leader. Look what happened to Apple when they came out with the first touchscreen Apple phones. Within a year, everybody had them. Before that, nobody had the touchscreens. Everybody had, you know, that. Remember, Research in Motion's BlackBerry was the leader. Huge lead on cell phones. And they had a little keyboard. Everybody thought, oh, that keyboard is key. You got to have the keyboard. That's not going away. Went away like the dodo bird. So everybody competes with everybody, and it looks like we're finally seeing some green shoots of competition against Amazon. And right now, it's coming from Costco. Costco, though, is still Amazon still is the behemoth, and Costco to Amazon is pretty small. But Costco as a business is very large. So it has heft. It has reach. It, you know, it's all over the place. There, you know, Costco is an $80 billion company. It's not small. Now, if you look at Amazon, well, Amazon's a $460 billion company. Much bigger. Much, much bigger. Amazon does $35 billion a quarter in sales, where Costco is doing $28 billion. Not that far behind as far as sales. Think about, well, why is Amazon's market cap so much bigger if they're only doing about, you know, 20% more, but they're four times the size? 20%, 25% more sales, but four times the size. Well, how do you come up with a market cap? It's the price of the stock times the number of shares outstanding. Right? Just looking at the price to sales ratio should tell you, well, who's more normal? Costco's price to sales ratio or Amazon's price to sales ratio? What's more common? What's more normal? And I'll tell you this. Costco's price to sales ratio is higher than normal, so that must mean Amazon's four times their size, four times higher than normal. Tells you, gives you a little bit idea of valuations. Now that's just one study, everybody. You got to look at other things too, like growth rates. I mean, if you look at Costco, their growth rate is, you know, 6, 7, 8%. If you look at Amazon, their growth rate, we're talking about sales, growth of the sales, their sales is 20% plus. That's a big difference. So Amazon probably deserves a higher price of sales ratio, but does it deserve that much higher? These investors think so. Investors think it deserves 184 PE ratio. I don't think so. I can't. You know, KPP Financial, my company, we cannot bring ourselves to overpaying for stocks that we know are obviously overvalued. We just can't do it. We're value. We like to see deep value, and we like to see growth. But value first. Time is up for the hour, everybody. Before we go, a reminder, if you missed getting in on my schedule in San Jose yesterday, which I was there all day, I'll be back in July on the 18th. July 18th, I'll be back up in San Jose. To reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. And remember, that's for July 18th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thanks for being with us today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.